What the Tech is brought to you by RX Bar. RX Bar is a whole food protein bar with no BS. Get 25% off your first order of the bestseller variety pack at rxbar.com/Andrew and use the promo code Andrew. That's rxbar.com/Andrew, promo code Andrew. Valid only in the U.S. And by Casper, a sleep brand that continues to revolutionize its line of products to create an exceptionally comfortable sleep experience one night at a time. Get $50 off select mattresses by visiting casper.com/Andrew and using the promo code Andrew at checkout. Terms and conditions apply. What's the tech? Hey everybody, welcome to What the Tech. I'm Andrew Zarian. Of course, I'm joined by the one, the only, Mr. Paul Thorat. How you doing, Paul?
Pretty good. You're really low all of a sudden again.
I don't know. We gotta figure out this audio. It's the end of the year, and I'm back at this full time, and I am so rusty at everything I'm doing, and the worst thing that could happen to somebody that does, you know, talking for a living is losing their voice. For a week and a half now, I lose my voice after every show that I do. And on top of that, I've developed this terrible cough. That's why I sound a little manly today. My voice is a little deep. And somebody said it's going to be a little too manly with Paul's beautiful pipes and mine today. And I said, you know what? We're gonna Andrewize it a little bit. I had to use self-bronzer because I look like a ghoul. So I'm covered in self-bronzer today. Look how tan my beautiful skin is, Paul. That's how we're starting the show tonight, guys. That's it.
No words.
This is our annual Best of 2018 show. Today we were going to generally put
2019
the show... I've been saying 2019 all day, and people have been correcting me, and it just shows how badly I need this year to end. Right now we're streaming on YouTube Live, we're on Twitch, we're on Periscope. We're trying out YouTube Live, and I kind of like that everybody has a YouTube account on this planet, so it's easy for people to kind of engage and chat. We're going to try that out, and we're not abandoning Twitch. I do like the Twitch chat. We're going to be doing that, and we have an awesome Discord chat going at the same time. If you want to join it, MG Geek, our moderator, is going to post a link in these chat rooms for you guys to join and follow with us. Paul, how was your week? Let's start off with that. I want to talk to you about that, because...
How was my week?
Yeah, I want to know. How'd you do this week? We don't talk anymore.
You know, I take the bus to New York now because I live in Pennsylvania, and the company that I take it's called Bieber Bus, and they're located in West Coastville. Well, actually, they might be located somewhere else, but the place I go from is West Coastville, Pennsylvania, and they were kicked out of the Port Authority. And remember the last time I came to New York, I had to take a ferry because they were dropping people off in Weehawken, New Jersey.
Yes.
And anyway, this company was in the New York Times this past week, and they explained what happened. I guess they owed like $215,000 in back fees, and they decided they got kicked out. So anyway, they have a spot now in Manhattan, so they actually drop off and pick up on a corner, so that's going to be a little more convenient. So. The point of this story, Andrew, is I'm hoping that the next time I come to New York, it will be a better experience for me.
Do you have a date and time for the next trip? Because I kind of miss our hangouts. Yeah. And now we lost Rattle and Hum, and you lost your bus. Everything is falling apart here.
So I could have been there tomorrow of all days for an event. And tomorrow's the day I do Windows Weekly. So there's no place. I can't get to where I am to where, you know, it's just too hectic. Sense,
well, if you needed a studio, you could have always messaged me because I'm in the process right now.
Oh, no. I know that. And I appreciate that. What I mean is, like, based on where this thing is and the time of it, I wouldn't have time to get to, you know, like, yeah. I would be stuck there. It just wouldn't work out. So
We do have a lot to talk about. Obviously, this is our best of 2018. We want to at the end of the year, we kind of try to make the show a little bit fun because the news kind of slows down. We do best of, worst of, and our predictions. And before we go into that, there was a big story that broke today or yesterday, and it is about the potential or alleged end of the Edge browser. This is a fascinating story. Yeah. And we don't know, listen, by the way, we don't know really if this is 100%. Brad, this is more Brad's thing, like you said on your post on Therat.com. But it is interesting. I want to talk about that.
I meant patting myself on the back is more of the type of thing Brad would do. But
that's what
the reason I'm a little uncomfortable being like, see, I was right. You know, I've been complaining about Edge since they announced it. And I've been calling, you know, I knowing that Microsoft would never really just get rid of it. But I literally yesterday on the podcast I did with Brad, I had said, you know, what Microsoft should do is get rid of this thing. And give you an option when you sign into Windows for the first time to choose the browser you want, just, you know, Chrome, Firefox, Opera, whatever. And then we found this out. It's kind of interesting. So we will see if this happens. My understanding is that if it's, you know, assuming it's real, and now I'm totally invested in it because I want this to happen. Microsoft is going to replace their home-built browser rendering engine, which is called Edge HTML. It's a fork of the Trident engine they had from Internet Explorer. And they're going to replace it with the Blink engine that Chrome uses, that is made by Google and is a fork itself of the WebKit web rendering engine. Now, this has a few ramifications, but all of them are positive. If it shouldn't change the Edge application at all. There's no reason they can't ship that same app just using a different rendering engine. It'll be better for developers. They'll have one thing to target. It'll be a standard. It's beautiful. It'd be good for web browser makers because they can differentiate their browsers with features like they do today. There's no change there. And it's great for users because there'll be so many benefits to this, including the things I just mentioned, but also just this notion of better apps in Windows because the Edge rendering engine now and soon to be Blink, hopefully, is the basis for how Windows handles progressive web apps.
So when you, as a developer, right, how does this impact extensions and things like that, that as a Chrome user you're kind of used to? Will that kind of transition with it? We don't know. I mean, technically, it may or may not, but this is a very interesting move by Microsoft.
Yeah. It's also, you know, think of it this way. Chrome itself is you know, I mentioned the Blink rendering engine, but if you want to go back to a different level, you could kind of say, because it's true, that Chrome is based on this thing called Chromium, and Chromium is itself, I believe, an open source browser. I think it's open source. It's open to some way, and other browser makers use it as the basis for their own browsers. So like Brave, for example, I believe is based on Chromium. Microsoft could make a Chromium web browser called Edge or called something else. It doesn't matter. They could build all of the features that are unique to Microsoft Edge into that thing. It could use the same ebook store, the same extensions, the same whatever, if that's what they wanted. But it also provides an interesting benefit. And I think a thing that a lot of people are looking for, which is a version of Chrome that is not full of Google tracking technology, right? Mm-hmm. That doesn't have all the Google stuff in it. I actually think this is an interesting time to make something like that. And given the climate these days and people's concerns about privacy, this might not be a horrible idea, you know, for that reason as well.
I want to talk about a little bit of the, you know, what this means for Microsoft in 2019 going forward. Before we continue, obviously, I want to take a minute and talk about a great sponsor, and that's Casper. You can save an additional $50 towards a select mattress purchase by going to casper.com/Andrew and entering the promo code Andrew at checkout. I've been talking about this for years now, and the reason why I talk about it is because I use a Casper mattress every single night. That is a mattress I sleep on because of the fact that this thing is absolutely perfect for me. The mattresses are made here in the U.S. They have a breathable design that lets you stay cool and regulate your body temperature throughout the entire night. And they give you a 100-day risk-free trial. Considering the fact that we spend one-third of our lives on a mattress, it's very important that you sleep on a mattress that's for you and that you know it works for you. So that's why Casper gives you a 100-night sleep guarantee. Paul has been sleeping on a Casper mattress for some time now. He has three mattresses now, right, Paul? Three? We have three Caspers. Yeah. Okay. I'm at one. I'm getting my second one for my guest room. And there's a reason why that not only, you know, as someone that talks about them regularly, I actually buy their products. And that kind of shows that, you know, I stand by what I talk about here and I stand by the product that they are. And it's a phenomenal product. And you get a $50. You get $50 towards select mattresses by visiting Casper.com/Andrew and using a promo code Andrew at checkout. Obviously, terms and conditions do apply. But I do want to say this is a great if you it's time for you to get a new mattress. And I talk to people regularly about, shockingly, Paul, I talk to people regularly about mattresses because they hear me talk about this on the show. So people are constantly asking me to like talk about, you know, they'll like do that live read again. It's like a bit with my friends. And I'll end up doing live reads, and a lot of them end up buying it, and they say, like, listen, it came in a box. It's, you know, it's very competitive with major premium brands. It's up there with them. If not, it's better, in my opinion, many people's opinions, and it's an unbelievable experience. You literally unbox the experience, and that's a great way to put it. Casper.com/Andrew. Get $50 towards a select mattress purchase by using by going to Casper.com/Andrew and using the code Andrew at checkout. I want to thank them for supporting the show. So here's where the fun begins, right? So Microsoft to use Chromium as a somewhat of a replacement, right? I mean, to kind of simplify it, it's a replacement for the current technology for Edge. I don't find Edge to be that terrible when I use it, but I also don't use it that much, you know, and I'm, you know, that's such a bad way of saying it, but really it's not the choice for me, but you are right. Right. If you don't want the Google tracking stuff, you don't want a lot of that stuff there by Google. You might be knowing that this is still Chromium in the back end. It's still the same engine. You might be more, the tech savvy people might be more, I guess, sold on using it. This is a very strategic thing for Microsoft to do. And I immediately said to you, I go, you know what? You know what this means to me? We're going to get a Windows phone with Android on the back end. that was my first, that was my leap that I went down. That if I were to predict something, I predict by the end of 2019, we will see an Android-based Windows phone.
So I had spontaneously had this discussion on Windows Weekly last week. We were talking about something else. I don't even know what it was. And it wasn't in the show notes. And it was just something I kind of talked myself into. And I don't mean to suggest that this is any kind of a viable plan, but I was like, you know, Microsoft really has no stake in core client OS development anymore. Like, why bother? Like, why bother with this? Like, why not? You know, if they could build something on top of Linux, which is being developed by others freely, and have it look like Windows and work like Windows and run Windows applications, like, they should just do that. You know, it's today's Microsoft is really embracing open source and open standards and working with other companies and, you know, partnering in brand new ways. And I think this would make sense. And assuming this technological leap can occur, right, that Linux could run Windows applications at full speed and full compatibility. Because to the end user, they don't care, you know, they don't care that Windows used to be based on DOS, and they don't care that Windows is based on NT today. If a future version of Windows was based on Linux, who would care? As long as everything just worked. That's the point. You know, when we move from DOS and Windows to Windows NT with Windows XP, nobody cared because all the apps ran. You know, it was not a big deal.
Yeah, well, number one, you want to
I just want to say that the point of that, and the reason this applies to the Edge thing, is that they haven't announced that, right? And they haven't announced this either. But what it looks like they're doing with Edge is what I described for Windows, right? You have this thing. It doesn't have to change for end users, or it can become better. They're completely replacing the underpinnings. And it's fine. It's going to be fine. Microsoft has spent so much time, so much effort, so much money trying to keep up with web standards. They can only ship this browser twice a year. Chrome can get up. It gets updated every month.
Yeah.
You know, like, why would you want to be on this treadmill? There's no value to it. They don't get anything from it. This is a huge win if it happens.
That is interesting, considering the fact how fast technology changes and you know, every year there's multiple major updates to Chrome. Multiple. I am curious to see how this impacts the rest of Microsoft's business and their ideologies when it comes to their products.
And
you know,
where else we might see this happen. Yeah.
You know, I was reading, was it you that posted this or was somebody else? Somebody wrote, maybe the future of Windows is not Windows. Was that you?
Yeah, that, well, that was, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was an interestingly timed thing. I had no idea about this Edge thing at the time I wrote this, but Microsoft is developing this thing that is not going to be called this, but is currently called Windows 10 Lite. It will probably be named something that is not Windows. You know, it's another take on what we used to call Windows RT, what we used to call Windows 10S. And it's this thing that, you know, has Windows at the core, right? Because there's this small part of Windows that, you know, is just the core part of the system from a component perspective. But it only runs store apps and progressive web apps. And it is kind of like Microsoft's version of Chrome OS. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my reaction to that kind of thing is, I don't think we need another thing that's Windows that doesn't run Windows apps. In fact, it kind of ties back to that Linux discussion. In other words, what makes Windows Windows, right? The reason Windows RT was so disappointing, the reason Windows 10S was so disappointing is that this thing looked like Windows, it worked like Windows, and then when you went to the web to download Chrome, it said no.
It didn't work. That's when it didn't work like Windows.
Right. And so forgetting the technical aspects of it, if you just want to put in plain English, what makes Windows Windows is the ability to run all the apps, not some of the apps. You know, like I said, when we went to NT with Windows XP, it ran all the apps. All the apps you were running work fine on this new system. So to the user, it did not matter what that thing was. And, you know, from my perspective, like, I'd like to see Microsoft with Windows focus on the things that are important to the platform and to its users. Not necessarily the things that are important to it as a platform maker. Like, Microsoft had a strategic imperative to create its own web rendering engine. I think that was mistaken. I still do. I think they are finally coming around to that, and they're getting rid of it. And I think Microsoft as a, you know, God, they've been making Windows for 35 years-ish, almost 35 years, over 30 years, certainly. I think there's still a mentality there that, like, they have to do this stuff. You know, like, we've always done this. And it's like, why? You know, like, why do you have to be, like, it's, you know, Apple built OS X and now Mac OS on a mock microkernel on a Unix-based system. It's open standards, early standards of some kind, and they built value on top of it. I think Windows could evolve in the same way.
I'm trying to see the negative in this, right? Yeah, where does the negative lie? For the consumer, really, there is no negative if it's more accessibility to stuff that you use and it's a different alternative. Well, go ahead.
Let me bring up the two that I've heard from people. Okay. Because these are, like, they're so obvious. I'm embarrassed I didn't think about it ahead of time, but then they started pouring in and I was like, right, of course. The first thing you're going to do is hear from people who say, well, you know, Chrome's a memory pig. This is terrible. That's not actually been my experience with the product, but leaving that aside, I looked at Task Manager this morning when the first one of those complaints came in. I had, I think it was 5 or 6 separate Chrome windows, 10 tabs in one of those windows, and it was using about 1.5 GB of memory. I have 16 gigs of RAM in the system, but, you know, if I had 4 or 8, that would have been fine. Windows is a sophisticated modern operating system. It can handle memory allocation. I don't see why people think about this stuff, but whatever. Also point out that Chromebooks, which run only Chrome, often ship with like 2 GB of RAM. They work great. They don't just work good. They work better than Windows PCs from a performance perspective. So clearly there's a way for this thing to be efficient. Microsoft used to brag about the battery life advantages of Edge over Chrome. And every time a new version of Windows 10 came out, they put out another video. They'd be like, this is how much faster we are. Every time they did that, the time between Chrome and Edge got much closer. And in the last one, in 1803, I was like, these things are not, they're like, you're telling me I could get an hour more battery life if I used Edge, or I could just have the entire web work and use Chrome. I'm going to take Chrome.
Yeah.
You know, no brainer. But the second one, I don't know if this is a complaint, but there are, you know, the mentality out there that is kind of like Microsoft should do everything. It's not just within Microsoft. There's also a group of people outside of Microsoft who are enthusiasts of the company or whatever, who just want to use the Microsoft thing. And they see this as another kind of retreat and also perhaps a move to like a monoculture, that this is dangerous. We're only going to have like one major web rendering engine in the world now, which is really two, but let's call like WebKit slash Blink, like the kind of the same thing. It's that's the web now. To these people, I would just say, like, A, as far as the monoculture thing goes, that's where you want the monoculture. That's a standard. You know, I guess we could call them different names to make it seem good or bad, but your monoculture is my open standard. This is what developers want. They want to write to one thing. And web browser makers can still differentiate their products by making them however they want to make them. Microsoft Edge could still look just like Microsoft Edge and still work just like Microsoft Edge. But, you know, for the Microsoft fans, too, I'd say, like, you know, this company needs to make bets that make sense for the company. I mentioned earlier that it really believed that it needed to make this thing. I think it's obvious now that it does not need to make this thing.
Yeah.
Windows itself is important. Windows with Chrome underneath it for the web stuff, you know, Blink, but Chrome, is better than Windows without that. And ultimately, this is a net win across the board. I don't think any of the complaints stand up to any scrutiny, basically.
I agree with you. I'm curious to see how this develops because this is all still new. It's speculation, a lot of it. You know, we're discussing it. But if this is true, which I could see it being true, I do see the ramifications of this mentality spreading through all of Microsoft with, you know, the way that they handle other products. Yes.
Well, actually, it's fair to say that this type of thing has already happened in other parts of Microsoft, right? The cloud-based version of Windows Server, Azure now, Microsoft Azure, that team has been very open to Linux and to various open standards, for example. Just today, Microsoft had a developer event at which they announced they were open sourcing three of their arguably legacy, but let's call them desktop development technologies, WinForms, WinPF, and WinUI. And these were like pre-Windows 10 era ways to create user interfaces for applications, right? Microsoft has previously open sourced the .NET framework as .NET Core. They've been improving that. They announced the third version in preview. It supports the open source versions of WPF, WinForms, and WinUI. So it's... You know, it's too bad so much time went by, but they really are embracing this across the board. And again, when I mentioned Linux as a possible underpinning for Windows last week, which again, I just off the top of my head, I'm not saying it's a great idea, but the notion there was apply the thinking that's occurring in the rest of Microsoft. What might that look like to Windows? Like, you can stop engineering stuff that doesn't matter and focus on things that do matter. Where might you do that? And this Edge thing just happened is kind of amazing because it's a great example of what I was talking about. It wasn't what I was thinking, but it's a nice example of that.
I'm choking, by the way. Well,
it's exciting. I agree.
I'm so excited. I'm choking. Obviously, we're going to discuss a lot of this. Before we continue on to our best of 2018, I want to take a moment and talk about our great sponsor, and that's RX Bar. This has been, when I was going to the city every day, I had to have an RX bar in my bag. When I was working out religiously, I had to have an RX bar before my workouts. Why? Because it's 100% whole ingredients with no BS, no bad stuff like added sugar, artificial colors, artificial flavors, preservatives, fillers. RX bar is made with a few simple, clean ingredients, where every ingredient serves its purpose, like egg whites for protein, dates to bind, nuts for texture, and other delicious ingredients like unsweetened chocolate, real fruit, spices like sea salt and cinnamon. These guys are great. Also gluten-free, soy-free, dairy-free, no added sugar, no artificial colors. I love this. I love these guys, and I actually need another variety pack. And also, you guys have a great offer. You got 25% off your first order of the bestseller variety pack. And I have to tell you, every one of these things is delicious. It cannot last in my house every time I get it. It goes immediately. Go to rxbar.com/Andrew. Use the promo code Andrew at checkout. This is valid only in the U.S., but they are absolutely great. I absolutely love the chocolate one is phenomenal, by the way. That one is great. But I crash every day at around 2:33. So when I'm done with What the Tech, I'm done. Like I need like a good hour to recoup and I need to eat something. And generally what I would do when I was at work, I got into the bad habit of going down to the pizzeria and grabbing something and shoving my face in two slices. And that's for anybody that's in fitness and trying to work out or trying to lose that weight, that is not good because you now have engulfed in so much carbs and oil and fat. It's terrible. This thing is great. I keep it in my desk. 3 p.m. comes, I eat the thing, and it's super healthy, and you're not killing yourself with nonsense, just shoving it in your mouth and just to eat something. It's fulfilling, and it tastes great. I love these guys. Go to rxbar.com/Andrew. Get 25% off your first order of the bestseller variety pack when you use the promo code Andrew at checkout. I want to thank RX Bar for supporting the show. Valid only in the U.S., this offer, and terms and conditions do apply. I want to thank RX Bar for supporting What the Tech. I love these things, actually. It's phenomenal. So, Paul, 2018, interesting year. I started the year with a full-time job, going into Manhattan every day, doing a 10 to 9, apparently, every day that I was doing. I was doing these crazy hours and trying to piece together What the Tech and do it from there and do it from home and changing the dates. And by the end of 2018, a lot changed, and I'm still working with the company in some capacity. I love them, but it was time for me to, I had other responsibilities come up. A lot other things happened that I needed to tend to, but a lot changed in 2018. And I think a lot changed in technology in 2018, where when we talk about what were the best products of 2018, best products, best tech, a lot of the best that happened. Okay. There's a lot to talk about here, and so
we didn't share lists. How many items did you come up with? If you see like splash marks on me, it's because I just discovered the hard way that when you shake a glass of water, water comes out of it. I was trying to dislodge some, the ice was stuck in it. For some reason, I decided shaking it was the smart way to handle that.
To kind of go back to what I was saying, I kind of forgot how we did this every year, and I did not make a list and share it with you. Okay. So I think it'll be interesting.
I did make a list.
Okay. You want to start then? Okay. Why don't you start with it then? Because then I'll piggyback off of you. You're in charge this time, Paul.
Okay. I don't really like the way this has gone, Andrew. Would you, get back on the plan or whatever?
Yeah, I'm back. I'm back.
So I have, I guess, 8-ish items. Some of them are related to each other that I think were positives for this year. I suspect I've left some stuff out. Windows 10 is going to make my bad list for next week for sure, for a variety of reasons. But one of the things I really liked that happened this year with Windows 10 was that Microsoft issued two major upgrades to the operating system, which it now calls feature updates, which were devoid of nonsense features. They were kind of the thing I've been asking for a long time, which was for Microsoft to go back and focus on some of the things that are wrong or incomplete or whatever with the system and, make it more consistent, fit and finish type work. And I love that they did that, it's a sad fact that the rollout of those two upgrades went horribly wrong. We'll talk about that next week. But the fact remains that from usability or just a functionality perspective, these were exactly the kind of upgrades that Windows 10 needed. It's the type of thing Apple's doing over with Mac OS, and I love that they finally woke up to this. So that to me was a huge positive.
I would say that was a huge positive, and I really, up until about yesterday, I was going to say I really like the fall update and 1809. All of a sudden, as I put that thought in my mind, I started having weird issues with this Spectre that I have not encountered on another machine. So I can't necessarily blame Microsoft, but I'll give an example. I'm looking at this right now. This is fascinating. 35% of my CPU is going to Windows Audio Device Graph. I got it. I'm sorry. I'm blind as a bat and I refuse to wear glasses. Windows Audio Device Graph Isolation. It's taken up 35% and 15% of, actually, no, not 15% of memory. It's nothing. It's just CPU it's taken. But
Andrew, you're focusing too much on a negative.
I am focusing on a negative. I know, positive. But, you're right. They did stick to a plan and they did release two updates.
Yes. I don't think the problem you're having is Microsoft's fault, for whatever that's worth. But
yeah, I was going to put Microsoft. So I'm going to skip on that. But if we were, if you were to talk about, I'm going to talk about a phone right now. In my opinion, I was going to go with the Pixel 3, and because as of a month ago, all these problems, and I have to tell you, a lot of people that bought the Pixel 3, they feel really burned, and they would get rid of it if it wasn't for the camera. And I've heard those that feedback from so many people saying, I really, really like the camera, and it's they can't see themselves going back to an iPhone. So now they're locked in on Android, and there's nothing really on the Android side. The Note 9 doesn't come close to the Pixel 3 as far as quality goes. The Samsung the Galaxy S9 that I have.
The camera, you mean?
Yeah, doesn't come close to the Pixel as far as the camera goes. So,
yeah, it's not as good.
I was going to say the Pixel. I'm not now, so by default, I'm going to say that it has to be the iPhone. I mean, really, year over year, consistently, it's the best premium phone on the market.
Yeah. You know, Apple is going to make the negative list for a couple of reasons next week, also regarding phones, but we don't have to worry about that too much. But I agree. It's strange to me that there's all these news stories right now about how terrible the new iPhones are doing, you know, in context, like compared to what they expected. They're still outselling every phone on the market, but they are incredibly high quality. They're beautiful phones. And the other thing I just add from like kind of a phone perspective is, not that this is new to this year, but OnePlus this year released a OnePlus 6 and a OnePlus 6T, both of which are awesome phones. And they have flagship specs, often far outstripping what's available from the Googles or Samsungs or whatever of the world, for a lot less money. And, you know, one of the complaints someone could make about these flagship phones is how expensive they got, and it's completely valid, but there's a great range of prices out there. The iPhone XR is not, you know, particularly expensive for a flagship class phone at $750, and the OnePlus phones are even less expensive. So there's value to be had there as well.
Is there, there was an update on how these iPhones are selling, correct?
What do you mean?
Want to keep that for the worst of? But there was
I think that's a discussion for next week, because that's something that's not been going too well.
Yeah.
I think that's tied to well, a couple of factors. You know, they're too expensive for most people. People's phones are like kind of like PCs; they're lasting longer. They don't feel the need to upgrade as often. And the market has matured. I mean, there aren't dramatic differences year over year, or even 2 years over, you know, the past phone. And people just don't feel incentivized enough to upgrade.
I think we are in the stage that most of these upgrades year over year are not really worth it. It's the second or third year that you would be kind of interested in, right? You know, we're not in this leaps and bounds era of technology.
We used to wait, remember, for like the S year on iPhones, right? So they'd come out with some kind of a new design, and you'd be like, let's give it a year. And I think now we're kind of, you know, iPhone or Apple rather used, they kind of had a second S year for the iPhone 6, right? There was a 6, a 6S. 7 was basically, this, you know, another 6S. I mean, 8 was another one. I mean, so those phones are kind of mature. They're tested well. You know, they've solved whatever problems they might have had. I don't think they really had too many problems. But I think these newer phones are kind of an unknown quantity. I think Face ID is slower and less reliable than Touch ID. It requires an extra swipe to get up. I think people are a little freaked by that kind of thing. There's new gestures people have to learn. But, you know, it's going to get there. I mean, I don't think there are any worries long term.
On the Apple side, I also had the new iPad Pros. That was on my best of... because it's a pretty device. It's beautiful, it's and pretty. It's bezel-less. Yeah, it's a
Listen,
pretty device,
Paul. Superficial fool.
No, I'll tell you why. Because you're seeing the transition to what their next products are looking like. You know, how they're kind of shifting away, and they're shifting from these giant bezels, and they're kind of separating their iPad, which was the iPad Air, and their Pro lineup. Where before, it didn't really justify spending so much. Now you have these perks to go into that other than just a big screen. That's what I meant by it.
Yeah. I mean, the iPad Pro is not going to make my negative, you know, my bad list or anything like that. But I there are a couple of things holding it back that haven't changed. And the move to USB-C was a good one, but it hasn't actually improved the capabilities that you get with the device beyond being able to mirror the screen to a display with a cable, which is not really a huge deal. I mean, Apple already has wireless technology for that. You know, you can't plug in any storage device and access it like a real computer, that kind of thing. So yeah. I think they'll get there. You know, 2019, I think, is going to be a big year for iOS, both for the iPad Pro, which was kind of ignored in this last year's update, and just for the system itself, because I think there's a bunch of functionality that Apple's been waiting to implement that they didn't do this year, and that we're going to see it next year. And that actually ties into one of the things that made my... I have two other Apple-related items on my list for the good stuff from 2018. One is that Apple took a step back, and rather than pumping iOS full of new features, they went and did their own fit and finish work on the system. And so for the first time in history, this is a version of iOS, iOS 12, that actually makes older devices faster, right? Previously, iOS always made older devices slower. That was part of their upgrade strategy. It's clear by how faster iOS 12 is that Apple, like, maliciously designed iOS previously not to be faster on older devices. And so that contributes to the iPhone problem, right? They're not selling as much because iOS is making existing devices better. But it's a, again, regardless of the motivation, it's an excellent thing for consumers because it's never happened before. And it's a nice gift to actually get something you want, you know, when you upgrade to a new version of an OS. So I think that's really, really cool.
What else do you have?
The other Apple one I have is related to the Mac. I think Apple has done a really good job over the years of maintaining this platform, which is kind of, you know, a legacy platform like Windows. It doesn't need a bunch of big bang features. But the one place where Apple has really fallen apart over the past 3 to 5 years is with Mac hardware. They just have not done a consistent job of upgrading their hardware. This year, they finally updated the probably the what would normally be the two most popular products, the MacBook Air and the MacBook Mini, and the Mac Mini rather. And I think both of them are great upgrades. I think they're both the right upgrade for that product. They're too expensive. You know, that's one of the negatives. We'll put that on next week for Apple across the board. They've raised prices, but 20% on everything. But it's nice to see them finally pay attention to this part of the of their offering, because it was something they had just ignored for too long. So well, I think that was, it was great they did that.
Well, those were major updates. They also updated the MacBook Pros, and a 13-inch right. for the first time in its existence got a real quad-core processor.
Yep.
People, I've gotten messages from people saying, how come you constantly talk about that? Because it's a really big deal to put a quad-core in that 13-inch. Nobody was able to do it up until Intel processor.
The improved third generation keyboard, which I don't think completely solves the problems they've had with reliability, but obviously is a major step forward. So I think that's important as well.
I'm going to save this for next week. Never mind. I take it back. I was going to say something, but it's going to tie into a crapping on something discussion. Have you used that smart keyboard for the MacBook Pro? Like the $200 smart keyboard that they have?
You mean for the iPad Pro?
Yeah.
No, I don't have a new iPad Pro, but I have the previous version. So my understanding is that the keyboard itself is identical. What's changed is the way it folds. It covers the entire device now, and not like an origami nightmare anymore. And then the connector is different, right? It's not.
The keys are still the same.
Yeah, the keys are the same. It's like a fabric covered kind of. It's almost like a rubber bubble kind of a thing.
I can't believe how expensive it is.
Everything, that's for next week. I mean,
yeah,
Apple, this problem is so pervasive, I gave it a name. I call it Apple Jacked. Yeah. And they're jacking the prices on everything. Literally, everything new that they come out with is about 20% more expensive than it used to be for the same thing.
The other problem is you don't really have a lot of options for that new 11-inch iPad Pro. You don't have options for a different keyboard. Maybe one or two, but you don't have like Logitech with like three different variants to get a keyboard for this thing. So you kind of,
but you could. I mean, there's no reason that can't happen.
I mean, it's going to happen. Right now, I'm saying. Right now, you're kind of stuck. Eventually, it'll happen. I want to jump to TVs really quickly, and you guys might be surprised by the TVs that I'm going to pick, but. My best of 2018 is going to be TCL as a company for televisions. and you're going to say, Andrew, isn't that a cheap Chinese brand that you get, you know, doorbuster sales on? It is cheap. It is Chinese, but it's not crappy. It's actually the displays are shockingly pretty good. To quote Paul, the displays are pretty good, and it's very inexpensive compared to competition. Now, during Black Friday, they had some crazy sales, but a 50-inch TV, you know, 4K HDR with Roku, it's like $287 for it. You know, you're talking about a 50-inch TV, and they actually, I was reading about the company, they actually manufacture, they make their displays. They make all the components for it. They don't just take like an LG or you know, a Hisense or whatever and just slap a different logo on it. They're actually manufacturing these TVs. And they're, I believe they're the third largest display manufacturer right now for televisions. So right. I think it's interesting to see how this company has grown, and nobody talks about Vizio anymore. Think of that.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Right. Do you own any of these, the TCLs?
Yeah. No, you know how TVs are. I mean, you buy a TV and then you're done. You know, like, you don't, I'm not shopping for a new TV every year or two. I mean, you know what I mean?
I don't know. I feel like a lot of people do. A lot of people get these budget. I think part of it is that we got used to buying these budget TVs, and then every two years we would swap it out because the technology was changing and it was getting kind of crappy. But now, you know, 4K HDR on a TV, a 50-inch TV for $300 does not sound that bad.
Right.
You know, it doesn't sound bad at all.
Yeah, the TV works fine. I don't really think about it.
Yeah. I am very curious. I have to do some research on it and read about it. I do want to know what happened to Vizio. I have the feeling that they kind of priced themselves out of the game by going up in price to kind of become more of a premium brand. And they fell out of existence for a lot of people.
Sure.
Right?
I don't think a company like Vizio is ever going to have a lot of brand loyalty, right? I mean, what those people are loyal to is low prices, good quality. And you've just described that there's a new option there that's better. So
I'm curious. You know, and the other thing is Amazon doesn't really feature Vizios anymore.
I'm surprised Amazon doesn't have Amazon Basics TVs.
You know what? That's a prediction show. That's for the prediction show right there.
Someone should make a blog called AmazonBasics.com and just talk about how it's gonna be like a year where you do nothing but live off of Amazon Basics. Like everything you buy is from Amazon Basics.
They probably would be able to do really well with it.
Yeah, I think so. This is semi related to the TV thing in the sense that it's like home smart technology. I feel like 2018 was the year where these personal digital assistants really grew up, or if they're Cortana, got shot in the head and left behind the barn. But for the major ones, which are Google Assistant and Amazon Alexa, there's been an interesting maturity that you see across the board. So they expand to more and more devices. These things are available everywhere. They're compatible with more and more devices. Their functionality has exploded so that there's all kinds of skills, or whatever Google calls their skills. And they can do complex things thanks to routines, which are basically, you know, scripts that you run that run multiple commands. There's the IFTTT type stuff where you can combine online services and use your voice with one of these assistants to trigger things. It's incredible. I just started reviewing an HP smart printer, which is like a printer for the 21st century that integrates with mobile phones, with your smart devices in your home. And this thing has just exploded. Like I think this stuff has just come a long way.
Is that printer review on Therat.com?
Yeah, it's called the Tango.
Okay. So absolutely, right? And I was really not 100% sold on the usage for a lot other than playing music and doing things for a lot of these smart devices, but I have a Google Home in every single room in my house at this point. Because I've gotten them either as gifts or I've gotten them as free devices. So I got one from Spotify because I have a family plan they were giving away. I think I don't know if they're still doing it, but last week we posted a link to it. But they were giving away. Oh my God, this thing is cloth, huh? This HP printer.
It has a cloth, a linen cover.
Oh, nice.
The printer itself is plastic. I mean,
I thought it had like the top.
But No, not like the laptop, but this is like the trend we see in these smart speakers, where they're starting to make them out of really natural materials and colors, and they look better in your home. You know, think about the original Google or Amazon Echo Dot. Excuse me, I'm losing my voice here, which was kind of like a cheap plastic hockey puck looking thing. And then compare it to the new version, right, which is covered in some kind of a linen material, and you know, it looks nice. This is part of that maturation I was talking about.
So what you were bringing up about smart, you know, these home automation, personal assistant devices growing up, I use my Google Home every single day now in the kitchen. That is the device I use in the kitchen. I set it as a timer. I ask for measurements if I need to convert it, because I don't want to, you know, think. I play my music on it. I get my reminders that I have a meeting coming up at 3:30, which I'm sure it's going to go off in a little bit, telling me. So it's kind of become a thing, to the point that my thermostat has Cortana on it, and I believe you have the same one. It does have Alexa integration.
Was unsuccessful. I we can talk about that later. But
so you will be unsuccessful. Do you have two wires or three wires coming out?
Right. I don't remember anymore. We found there was no diagram in the book that mapped exactly to what we had. But the problem is a module is a separate C-wire. Module that you actually have to put down on your like furnace or whatever. And
yeah, the C wire.
I'm gonna have to bring someone in to do this. I couldn't do it myself. I took apart our existing the analog round thing that everyone has.
So I'm going to have next week on the show, maybe for the post show, I'll do like a detailed review of it, because I love it. And I would say this is a great first gen, but I'm curious to see what they do with updates. I'm very interested to see it, but I'm also curious to see what this does to my gas bill, you know, because I have natural heating. Natural gas heating, and it's smart enough to know when I'm in the room, when I'm not in the room. It's able to kind of pick up trends and turn off. Yeah. But I also have a Nest on the second floor that does everything the same way. So I'm curious to see how this impacts my gas bill, because my gas and electric in February of last year was $1,600. Welcome to New York.
Yikes.
And I'm not, and obviously, you know, I got kids. I got to run the heat. I can't keep it at 65 every day like I would prefer. So there's a couple of things, but it's obscene how expensive it is. So with these smart thermostats and an updated furnace that I got that's a little smarter, I'm curious to see how this changes things. But I do have to tell you, it is really cool that I could go to Cortana and say, "Who's Paul Theroux?" And it says it to me every time I go to my thermostat. I'm not joking. Okay. I did that today. I said, "Who is Paul Theroux?" And it told me.
Well, I think the big deal with this stuff is that it's not even spousal acceptance factor is not the right term. But the fact that non-technical people, normal people like my wife and my daughter use this stuff every day as well is, you know, in many ways the best anecdotal evidence of all, right? It's not some tech guy saying, "Yeah, it's cool to talk to my thermostat in your case, or smart display in my kitchen," or whatever it might be. Normal people see the value, and you can see it just kind of becoming part of the house, you know. It's neat. I think it's come of age.
To kind of piggyback on yours, I would say it was the coming of age for smart lights also this year.
Yeah,
where it kind of matured beyond just LED lights. You know, everybody started doing, slowly, for the last couple of years, we've all been converting over to LED lights. And a lot of negativity in the early days, because people started just buying any LED light, and it was very expensive and they looked like crap because it was either very bright or very warm.
Sure.
It was very cold or very warm. And a lot of people were very turned off to it. I mean, I was one of those. In my chandelier, I got, you know, these inexpensive. I bought a box of them thinking it's lights. I hadn't even considered how bad they'll look, and they look terrible. So I ended up going with a more expensive brand, and I did it. But we are now in the age of smart lights, where, you know, between Philips Hue and Lifex and some of the other brands, I'm seeing a lot of people integrating these in their homes, and they're not just getting plain color ones. Like the one right here that I have, these Lifex lights, I could have all different colors. You know, it just does total RGB, and I could set it however warm I want the light, however cold I want the light. And this is kind of becoming the trend here. At what point does it become the mainstream, right? Are we at that point, you think, Paul?
Not exactly. They're still really expensive. I think that's a problem. And it probably they're always going to be more expensive, but it's certainly more mainstream, you know, than it used to be. And it this does tie into the maturing digital assistant thing, because I haven't done this yet, but we have, you know, one of the things I could do, I guess, is, you know, we have Philips Hue lights around. We bought four more that we're going to put out in the front of the house. We have lights, ambient lights in our sunroom where the Christmas tree is. And you could create a routine called like Merry Christmas, and Merry Christmas could turn the lights all to like Christmas themed red and green lights, and could cue up some music, you know, that would play in the speakers that are in that room, that it would, you know, Christmas related. So it's definitely part of it. You know, everyone has different, I think when it comes to smart home, the thing that you did, you know, putting Google homes around the house, right, is I think is the gateway drug for this stuff.
Yes, it
and
is.
I think this is, you know, yeah, and I think this is what it's going to be different for different people. My brother-in-law has like a home security system that when it senses movement, he gets an alert on his phone and he can watch a live video on his phone, you know. And I don't do that, and I probably won't ever do that, but some people want that home security stuff. Some people are going to be into the lights. Some people are going to be in the smart thermostats like you have in your house. I mean, there's different triggers for different people, but I think what it all ties back to is that thing I said earlier, which is just these assistant products or services have become so pervasive and so capable that this other stuff is starting to make more sense. You know, I mean, I this is kind of, maybe this is not a great example, but like if you had, you could buy Sonos speakers, for example, and you could use a Sonos app or a handful of apps to play music. But now because Sonos integrates with Alexa and will soon integrate with Google Assistant, you'll be able to tie that into other stuff. And that's what makes it much more interesting. You know, it's the broader platform, not just that one thing by itself.
Yeah. I do want to, here's a question for you, actually, before we go on. The big problem here is integration. Like right now, let's say you got your Google Home and you got a couple of Philips Hues, and you are now stuck in that ecosystem of Philips Hues. You're never going to jump out.
Oh, I see.
If you're invested, well, you're invested. You can't go and buy a LifeX light or buy.
We're exceeding the bounds of the show, Andrew.
I know.
Let's talk about this soon, because what I'll say to that is, I've made specific buying decisions based on what you're saying. But the truth is, one of the nice things about these assistants is you can, like I said, the Merry Christmas thing. I could have Philips Hue lights out in that room. I could have whatever other kind of lights in this room, and I could have a third set of lights. They could all be part of a routine. They could all change color together, even though they're not compatible with each other, because it's their compatibility with the assistants, which is what makes them compatible. It's kind of this hub notion. So I think that's an awesome conversation to have, but I don't think this is like the best of 2018 is the best place for that, I guess.
Yeah. Do we have time? Do you have any more on your list?
Yeah, just a couple I'll go through real quick.
Okay,
I have some video game related stuff. I would say if you have not bought into the newest generation of video games, this is the best time to do it. Xbox One S and PlayStation 4 are both available for as little as $200 on sale, $250 typically. The Xbox One X, which is the 4K gaming version, and the PlayStation 4 Pro are lower price than they were at launch as well, which is nice. There's a nice upgrade path there. And both those companies have online services, Xbox Game Pass and PlayStation Now, that kind of point to the future of the platform. And both these things have hundreds of games. You can stream them down to your console, play them. You don't have to buy them. It's like a low monthly fee. It's basically $10 a month. It is just an incredible thing for gaming. These new, they're not really new, but these consoles are hit the point where the libraries are great. The online services are great. The prices are better than they've ever been. And you kind of can't go wrong either direction.
Also, Nintendo Switch.
Nintendo Switch, yeah. Yeah, it's always, which is cheaper than this as well, is really nice. And it has that portable component. I also just have a quick note about Fortnite. I'm not actually personally a fan, and I don't play Fortnite, but its influence is undeniable. Mm-hmm. And this type of game, like a battle royale type of game, has influenced and changed gaming and esports forever. And even a heavyweight like Call of Duty, Call of Duty is really interesting. It's been the best selling game every year since God. And we learned last week that the newest Call of Duty came out without a single player campaign. It was the best selling game of that month, and it was already the best selling game of the year. I actually think a big component of that is that they adopted this battle royale game style as one of the game modes. And so alongside legacy deathmatch type multiplayer modes and also zombies, they now have this third game type battle royale, which Blackout they call it, but it's based on the gameplay that was popularized by Fortnite. Not invented by, but popularized by Fortnite. So, big deal.
Very, very cool. I do want to remind everybody, if you're watching this live, stay tuned. We're gonna do our Patreon show. It's a bonus show that we record each and every week. So we're gonna continue that after this. If you want to fund us, you want to help the show, you can fund us as little as $1 per week, and it goes a long way, pays the bills, and it keeps the lights on here. Go to patreon.com/whatthetech. That's patreon.com/whatthetech. We're gonna have a lot more Patreon content coming up in 2019. Maybe Paul and I could play video games together. That could be a bonus show. That'll be fun. We could play games together. We'll be Twitch streamers. That's what we'll do, Paul. That's a new career for us in 2019. We'll start doing
that.
Watch
me prestige in Call of Duty in real time.
Yeah, and then watch me be terrible. You could do that.
Right. That's okay. I like to undermine my teammates, so that will work out nicely.
That'll work, see? Patreon.com/whatthetech. You can go there, join it. Also, a little fun thing. So my wife started an Etsy store, and yesterday she launched a whole bunch of like Mat Men stuff for the wrestling show, but she also has some GFQ mugs and wine glasses and things like that. If you guys want to check it out and you want to maybe get like a GFQ wine glass or a GFQ mug, you go to bit.ly, that's bit.ly/GFQ podcast. That's bit.ly/GFQ podcast. I'm going to post a link in the chats while we're doing the show right now. If I could open up the chats, I could post a link in the chats. There we go. Go and buy something. The holidays are here. Also, she has great stuff for other people. She has a whole bunch of other, movie lines and things like that. She sold like 40 nurse wine glasses the other day. Like a big order. I guess it was maybe for a hospital. It's wild. I mean, how she's doing with this thing. It's crazy. That's bit.ly/GFQ podcast. You can follow me on Twitter at Andrew Zan. You can follow Paul at The Rot. Stay tuned. We're going to do What the Talk right now. If you're listening to the podcast, go to patreon.com/whatthetech. Get it there. Fund us there. And next week, we're doing the worst of 2018. I was going to say 2019 again. Look at that. We're going to do the worst of 2018.
This time, I started making the list early.
Yeah, so I have my worst of. My worst of list, yes. And it's a lot of terribleness. I'm just going to let
there
you
was,
know.
There was a lot of terribleness.
Yeah, a lot of terribleness. So that's it for this week, guys. See you later.